trickle of blood seeped from the corner of his mouth. I was crying. I hadn't cried since I'd watched Victor die, but tears now streamed down my face as I rose on numb legs. I stepped to the side. I didn't know what I was doing or where I was going, but I made it to the door. It was unlocked. I'm sorry, I said again, shaking. A choked, wet laugh rattled from him as he bent forward, slamming his hand down on the floor.
No, he gasped. No, you're not.
But I was. I turned around, blindly staggering out the door into the empty pathway that connected to another door at the end. Cold, wet air drifted in through the open wall, but I barely felt it. I had no plan, no idea how to get out of the keep. I kept walking. Halfway through the hall, it was like a switch was flicked inside of me. All the horror and sorrow ceased, and instinct took over. Breathing heavily, I threw open the door and raced down the cramped stairwell, then out through an open doorway into snow. For a moment, I was struck by the beauty of the thick flakes of snow slowly drifting down. A thin layer already blanketed the ground and coated the bare trees. It was so silent, and everything was clean and untouched. A voice from inside the keep jarred me into action. Taking off across the snow-covered grass, I ran toward the woods. In the back of my mind, I knew I wasn't prepared to make an escape. The clothing I was wearing was too thin, even if it wasn't also torn, nearly to shreds. I had no idea exactly where I was or where to go from here. There could be Kraven in these woods. There would definitely be dissenters. There could also be Wolven, who would surely be able to track my moves. But still I ran, the thin soles of my boots slipping on the dusted ground of the forest floor. I ran because I stabbed him. I stabbed him in the heart. He would be dead by now. I'd killed him. A ragged sob left me as blowing snow mingled with my tears. Oh, gods, I had to do it. Everything about him, about us, was a lie. Everything. I had to do it. I had to. There was no warning, no sound, nothing. An arm circled my waist, catching me mid-run. I shrieked as my feet slipped out from under me. But I didn't go down. I was hauled back and slammed into a hard, warm chest. My feet dangled nearly a foot from the ground. Shock stole the very breath from my lungs. I knew who it was before he even spoke. It was his scent of lush spice and pine. It was the burst of rage-lanced anguish and disbelief that mirrored mine, coming through my senses that I hadn't closed down. For the first time since I'd met him, his emotions overwhelmed him and, therefore, me. It was not the hawk I'd fallen for so quickly that held me against him. It was not the guard who'd sworn on his life to keep me safe, who now wrapped his fist in my hair and jerked my head back and to the side. It was not Hawk's hot breath that caressed my exposed throat. It was him, Prince Castile Danir of Atlantia, the Dark One. An Atlantean, unlike a Wolven or an Ascended, can't be killed by a stab to the heart. He growled, yanking my head farther back. If you wanted to kill me, you should have aimed for the head, princess. But worse yet, you forgot.
Forgot what?
That it was real. Then he struck. Two twin bursts of fiery pain lanced my neck, causing my entire body to jerk. The burn traveled all the way through my body, stunning me in its intensity. I couldn't move. I couldn't even scream around the pain. His arm around my waist was like an iron vise as he drew long and hard from the wound his fangs had created. I shook, eyes peeled wide as my hands fell to his arm. My nails dug in. The burn, the deep, staggering pull against my throat as my blood flowed freely from me into him, shorted out my entire system. The building scream clawed its way around the pain. And then, within mere seconds of when he'd sunk his fangs into me, everything changed. The intense hurting became something else, something overwhelming in a wholly different way. A new ache erupted inside me, heating my blood until it felt like every part of me was filling with molten lava. My wide eyes were unseeing as the heat filled my chest, my stomach, and pooled in the space between my thighs. His mouth tugged on my throat once more, and this time that pull went straight to my very core. My body jerked with a flood of pounding arousal. He groaned, his arm tightening around me, and I felt him hard and thick against my rear. I gripped his arm as tension coiled inside me. Without warning, he ripped his mouth from my neck. He let go, and I stumbled forward, nearly falling. Trembling with confusion and the desire still sparking inside of me, I turned to him. He stood several feet from me, his chest rising and falling with rapid short breaths. His eyes were wide. Red smeared his lips. I lifted my hand, pressing it to my neck. Wet warmth greeted my fingertips. I took a step back. "I can't believe it," he said, and he ran his tongue along his bottom lip. His eyes closed briefly as he shuddered, letting out a rumble that reminded me of the Wolven. His lashes swept up, and his pupils were so dilated only a thin strip of amber was visible. "But I should have known." Before I could figure out what he meant or what would happen next, he was on me, moving so fast I couldn't track him. His mouth crashed into mine as one hand shoved into my hair, his other arm clamped to my waist. I wasn't just kissed, I was devoured. I tasted my blood on his lips, on his tongue. I tasted him. I wasn't sure exactly when I kissed him back. Was it after a few seconds? Or had I been kissing him from the moment his mouth touched mine? I didn't know. And all I did know was that I was starved for him. Right or wrong, I wanted him. That's why I didn't fight him when he brought me to the ground. The contrast of the cold snow against my back and the heat of his body pressed into my front drew a gasp from me. I didn't think he heard it as I was caught up in his hungry kisses, and I realized then that he'd been holding back when he kissed me all the times before. Now he wasn't hiding who he was. He rocked against me as he slid his hand over my waist to my hip. We moved, straining and gasping. His teeth caught my bottom lip. A brief sting registered, and he shuddered, groaning as the metallic taste renewed. Breaking the kiss, he lifted up enough to look down at me. "Tell me you want this." His hips were still churning against mine. "Tell me you need more." "More," I whispered, before I could even think about what we were doing, what we'd done, who he was.
"Thank fuck," he grunted.
And then he reached between us, his fingers snagging the front of my breeches. He pulled on them hard enough to lift my hips. Buttons popped free, flinging into the nearby snow. "Goodness," I murmured. He barked out a short, harsh laugh as he shoved my pants down until one leg was completely free and the breeches snagged on the other ankle.
"You know this shirt was beyond repair, right?"
"What?" The sound of cloth tearing was my only explanation. I dipped my chin, seeing my breasts. He was staring too, his hand tearing at his own breeches as his eyes tracked the streaks of blood dried along my stomach, moving over the hardening tips of my breasts.
"I will kill them," he whispered. "I will fucking kill them all."
I didn't think he was talking about the old scars. Then I wasn't thinking at all. He kissed me as he settled over me, between my legs, and then things spun. There was no slow seduction this time, no long and drawn-out caresses and kisses. There was a pinch of discomfort, but it quickly gave way to the aching, pulsing pleasure, and there was no room in my body or mind or between us for there to be anything other than what we felt. It was just him and me, the taste of my blood and his on our lips, and this need I didn't quite understand. Around us, the snow fell heavier through the trees, soaking his back and my hair as we clutched and grasped at one another. There were only the sounds of our wet kisses, our bodies coming together and parting, and our moans. One long, dragging kiss ensued, and then his mouth moved from mine to my chin, and then lower, his lips and those sharp teeth gliding over my throat. His actions elicited a shiver that curled its way down my spine as he stilled above me. Was he going to bite me again? Instead of fear, there was a rush of wicked heat. The pain from his fangs had been brief, and what had come afterward? I squeezed his shoulders, too lost to even wonder if I shouldn't want him to, too far gone to think about the consequences if he did. I felt his tongue against my skin, circling and laving over the sensitive mark he'd left behind. Then he lifted his head. I saw his eyes long enough to see that his pupils had constricted before his lashes swept down and his mouth was on mine once more. And then he was moving again, his hips retreating and then pushing back in, rolling and grinding as his fingers played with my breast. He moved slowly now, so lazily that I felt as if I were being strung out. I shuddered under him, slipping my hand into his snow-damp hair. The tension was building again, coiling until I couldn't take his slow, measured movements any longer. His teasing grinds and rolls. I lifted my hips, trying to urge him to move faster, to go deeper, but he held back until I cried out and pulled at his hair. He half laughed, half growled as he lifted his head. "I know what you want, but..." Heart racing out of control, I squirmed under his weight. "But what?"
"I want you to say my name."
"What?" His hips continued moving in maddeningly slow circles.
"I want you to say my real name."
My lips parted in a sharp inhale. He stilled once more, his eyes luminous.
"That's all I ask."
All he asked. It was a lot.
"It's acknowledgement," he said, his thumb swirling and tugging. "It's you admitting you are fully aware of who is inside you, who you want so badly, even though you know you shouldn't, even though you want nothing more than to not feel what you do. I want to hear you say my real name."
"You're a bastard," I whispered. One side of his lips curled.
"Some call me that, yes. But that's not the name I'm waiting to hear, princess."
I wanted to deny him. Gods, did I ever.
"How bad do you want it, Poppy?" he asked.
My grip tightened on his hair as I yanked his head down. There was a flash of surprise in those glowing eyes.
"Bad," I snarled. "Your Highness."
His mouth opened, but I lifted my legs, curling them around his hips. Taking advantage of his surprise and tapping into my own anger, I rolled him onto his back, fully intending to leave him there, but I hadn't foreseen what the move would do when I rocked back. I sank down onto his length, my body shockingly flush with his. My shout ended in his groan as I planted my hands on his chest. Gods! The fullness was almost too much. "Oh," I whispered, taking ragged breaths. His chest was moving just as unevenly under my hands.
"You know what?"
"What?" My toes curled inside my boots.
"I don't need you to say my name,"
he said, his eyes half closed.
I just need you to do that again. If you don't start moving, you might actually kill me. A startled giggle burst from me. I don't know what to do. Something about his features softened, even though stark need shone through the thin slits of his eyes. Just move. His hands went to my hips. He lifted me up a few inches and brought me back down. A deep sound radiated from him. Like that. You can't do anything wrong. How have you not learned that yet? I wasn't sure what he meant by that, but I mirrored his movement, moving up and down as snow fell across his shirt. My palm slipped, angling me forward. A spot deep in me was touched, sending out bolts of intense pleasure in waves. Like that? I breathed. His hands tightened on my hips. Just like that. With each move of my hips, that spot was touched, and more streaks of bliss shot through me. Before I knew it, I was moving faster above him, and I knew he was watching me as my eyes drifted closed and my head fell back. I knew his gaze was fastened on my breasts and where we were joined, and that knowledge was too much. The tension whipped out, shattering me. I cried out as I shuddered, my body spasming as intense shards of ecstasy sliced through me. He moved then, rolling me back under him and thrusting his hips against mine. His mouth claimed mine as his body did the same, pounding against me, into me, until the pleasure seemed to crest once more, the fierceness shocking as he seemed to lose all sense of control. His large body moved over mine, in me, until he pressed hard against me. His shout swallowed in our kisses as he shuddered. I don't know how long we lay there in the falling snow, our hearts and breaths slow to steady, my grip still tight on his shoulders, his forehead pressed to mine. After some time, I became aware of his thumb moving along my waist in idle up and down sweeps. The heat of passion cooled, and in its weight was confusion. Not regret, not shame, just confusion. I don't understand, I whispered, my voice hoarse. Don't understand what? He shifted above me. Any of this? Like, how did this even happen? I winced as he started to ease out. He halted, brows furrowed. Are you okay? Yeah, yes. I closed my eyes as he remained still for several moments before moving to my side. Are you sure? He asked. I nodded. Look at me and tell me you're not hurt. My eyes opened and I looked at him. He was raised on one elbow, seemingly unaware of the snow falling around us. I'm fine. You winced. I saw you. I shook my head in disbelief. My gift was utterly useless since I was feeling too much to concentrate, so I couldn't even cheat. That's what I don't understand, unless I completely imagined the last couple of days. No, you didn't imagine anything. His gaze roamed over my face as I blinked snow off my lashes. Do you wish that this, right here, hadn't happened? I could lie, but I didn't.
No. Do you?
No, Poppy. I hate that you even have to ask that. He looked away, jaw flexing. When we first met, it was like, I don't know. I was drawn to you. I could have taken you then, Poppy. I could have prevented a lot of what has happened, but I lost sight of a lot of things. Each time I was near you, I couldn't help but feel as if I knew you. I think I know why it's been like that.
He said this like it was the answer to how we had gone from me stabbing him in the heart to tearing off each other's clothes. I shivered in the cold, damp air as I shook my head again. Being drawn to one another explained none of that.
You're cold,
Rolling to his feet in one smooth movement, he fastened his pants with the one lone button that remained and then extended his hand.
We need to get out of this weather.
We did. Well, I did. He probably didn't, considering he could be stabbed in the chest and be all right minutes later. I placed my hand in his and stated what I felt he needed to be reminded of. I tried to kill you.
I know.
He pulled me up onto my feet.
I can't really blame you.
I stared, dumbfounded, as he swooped down, tugging up my breeches as he rose.
You don't? No. I lied to you. I betrayed you and played a role in the deaths of people you love,
he said, listing the reasons as if it were a shopping list.
I'm surprised that was the first time you tried.
I continued to stare.
And I doubt it will be the last time you try.
The corners of his lips turned down as he tried to secure the pants, but discovered that the buttons were somewhere on the snowy ground.
Damn it,
he muttered, reaching for my shirt. It was torn straight down the middle. He grabbed the sides and pulled them together as if that would repair the material. He cursed again, giving up. He reached up, pulling his other shirt off over his head.
Yeah.
I stood there, wondering if I was suffering from blood loss or post-orgasmic bliss. Maybe a combination of both, because I couldn't believe this. You're not mad? He lifted a brow as his gaze met mine.
Are you not still mad at me?
I didn't have to think about that. Yes, I'm still angry.
And I'm still angry that you stabbed me in the chest.
He stepped toward me.
Lift your arms.
I lifted my arms.
You didn't miss my heart, by the way. You got it pretty good,
he continued, pulling his shirt on over my head, tugging it down over my stiff arms.
That's why it took a minute to catch up to you.
It took more than a minute. My voice was muffled as my head got caught for a moment in his shirt before popping free. One side of his lip kicked up as he tugged the other sleeve down.
It took a couple of minutes.
I looked down at the shirt and saw the jagged tear on the front. It didn't line up with my chest, but with my stomach. My gaze went to his bare chest. There was a wound, the skin pink and torn around it. Stomach churning, I gave a shake of my head. Will it heal?
It will be fine in a few hours, probably sooner.
Atlantean blood, I whispered, and swallowed thickly.
My body will immediately start to repair itself from any non-fatal wounds,
he explained.
And I fed, that helped.
I fed. My hand fluttered to my throat, to the two tiny wounds that felt as if they'd already started to heal. A faint spike of pleasure pulsed through me. I jerked my hand away.
Will anything happen to me from you feeding? No, Poppy, I didn't take enough. And you didn't take enough of mine earlier. You'll probably be a little tired later, but that's all.
I went back to staring at his wound. Does it hurt?
Barely,
he muttered. I didn't believe him. Placing my palm against his chest, a few inches from the wound, I tried to tap into my gift. I felt it stretching, so I opened up my senses. He became very still. The anguish I always felt was there, heightened and stronger than before, even though he'd gotten control of it at some point. It no longer overwhelmed him, but there was a different kind of pain underneath it. It was hot, physical pain. The wound might heal, but it hurt, and it wasn't minor. I did what I could without thinking once more. I took his pain, both of them, and I didn't think of the beaches of the Stroud Sea this time. I thought about how I felt when he was in me, moving inside me. And all of that did nothing but confuse me even more. He placed his hand over mine, and when I glanced up, I saw the lines of white tension around his mouth had vanished. There was wonder in his eyes. I should have known then. He brought my hand, stained with our blood, to his mouth, and pressed a kiss to my knuckles. Known what? I asked, trying to ignore how the act tugged at my heart. Known why they wanted you so badly that they made you the maiden. I wasn't exactly following what he was saying, but that could have had more to do with my fog-filled brain than anything.
Come.
He tugged on my hand and started walking. Where are we going?
Now?
We're going back inside so we can get cleaned up and... He trailed off with a sigh as he noticed that I was clutching the side of my pants to keep them up. But before I even knew what he was about, he picked me up and held me in his arms, against his chest, like I weighed nothing more than a soaked kitten.
And apparently to find you some new pants.
Those were my only pair.
I'll get you new ones.
He strode forward.
I'm sure there is some small child around here who would be willing to part with their breeches for a few coins.
My brows puckered. His mouth was soft, and a faint grin played across his lips as he stepped around a fallen limb. And after that?
I'm taking you home.
My heart about stopped for the 100th time that day. Home?
I hadn't expected him to say that.
Back to Macedonia? Or to Carcedonia?
Neither.
He looked down, his eyes a wealth of secrets. He smiled then, a wide one that stole my breath. He did indeed have two dimples, one in each cheek, and I saw then why there'd only been half grins before. I saw the two fine points of his canines.
I'm taking you to Atlantia.
Chapter 40. I was deposited in the same room where he'd given me his blood, and then I'd stabbed him. Him. I stared at the damp mark on the wood floor, where the blood had been cleaned up. Him. I needed to stop referring to him that way. He had a name, a real one. I may never say it when and how he wanted, but I needed to stop thinking about him as if he were Hawk. Or somehow nameless. His name was Castile. Cass. This was where he had saved my life, and the chamber where I then attempted to take his. He succeeded. I failed. My gaze flicked to where Kieran stood by the door, eyeing me as if he expected me to make a rush for the window and throw myself out of it. He arched a brow at me, and I looked away. He had left, to do the gods only knew what, leaving Kieran as a sentry. Well, I did know he'd done something. After he'd left, a dozen or so servants filled the brass tub in the bathing chamber with steaming hot water, and another placed a fresh pair of black breeches and a tunic on the bed. A part of me was surprised that he'd brought me back here and not to the cells. I wasn't sure what that meant, or if it should matter, or if it did mean something. My thoughts still reeling from everything. I didn't know anything at the moment, and he hadn't answered any of the questions I'd asked on the way back. Say, for example, was Atlantia still an actual place? Because as far as I knew, it had been all but leveled during the war. Then again, everything I thought I knew was turning out to be false. I rubbed my hand over my cheek as I glanced at Kieran. Does Atlantia still exist? If my random question caught him off guard, he didn't show it.
Why would it not?
I was told that the wastelands
were once Atlantia,
he cut in.
They were once an outpost, but that land was never the entirety of the kingdom.
So Atlantia still exists?
Have you ever been beyond the Skotos Mountains?
The corners of my lips turned down. Do you always answer a question with a question?
Do I?
I shot him a droll look. A faint grin appeared and then slipped away. No one has been beyond the Skotos Mountains, I told him. It's just more mountains.
Mountains that stretch so far and wide that the very tops are lost to the deepest mist? That part is true. But the mountains don't go on forever, Penelope. And the mist there may not contain Kraven, but it's also not natural, he said, and a shiver danced over my shoulders. The mist is a protection.
How?
It's so thick, you just don't see anything. You think you see everything.
A strange light filled his pale blue eyes.
The mist that blankets the Skotos Mountains is there so anyone who dares pass through will want to turn back.
And those who don't turn back?
They don't make it through.
Because Atlantia is beyond the Skotos? I asked.
What do you think?
What I thought was that talking to Kieran was an exercise in patience and energy, two things I was running low on.
Are you going to bathe yourself?
He asked.
I wanted to. My skin was not just dirty, it was also chilled, and I was still wearing his bloodied shirt.
But I also wanted to be difficult because I was so freaking confused by everything, and as he had warned, I was tired.
What if I don't? That's your choice, he replied. But you smell of Castile.
I jolted at the sound of his name, his real name. I'm wearing his shirt.
That's not the kind of smell I'm talking about.
It took a minute for me to get what he was referencing. When I did, my mouth dropped open. You can smell? Kieran's smile could only be described as wolfish. I'm going to bathe. He chuckled. Shut up, I snapped. Gathering up the new clothing and hurrying into the bathing room, I closed the door behind me, annoyed when I saw there was no lock. Cursing under my breath, I looked around and found several hooks on the wall. I hung the tunic and breeches there. I quickly stripped and stepped into the bath, ignoring the twinge of pain in a very private area as I sat into the lavender-scented water. I didn't allow myself to think about anything as I got down to scrubbing off my blood and his. My stomach turned over as I used the bar of soap to wash my hair. When suds ran down the back of my neck, I dipped under the water and held myself there. I stayed until my lungs and throat burned and white spots sparked behind my closed eyes. Only then did I break the surface, gasping for air. What was I going to do about him? About everything? A strangled, hoarse-sounding laugh escaped me. I didn't know where to even begin to start figuring out this mess. I'd just learned that the Kingdom of Atlantia still existed, and that seemed like the least crazy thing to have discovered. Gods! I still didn't even understand how I'd gone from learning who he truly was, stabbing him in the heart, to then willingly falling into his arms. Squeezing my eyes shut, I dragged my hands down my face. I couldn't blame the bite, even though it had some kind of arousing effect, just like his blood had. And who, by the way, would have ever thought that would feel good? But damn, it had. I shivered as a tight curling motion bloomed low in my stomach. That was the last thing I needed to think about right now, if I had any hope of figuring out what I needed to do. And I needed to come up with some kind of plan, and quickly, because even though he didn't seem to hold my attempt to kill him against me, I wasn't safe here. I wouldn't be safe anywhere with his people. They hated me. And if half of what he and Kieran claimed about the Ascended and what they'd done was true, I couldn't blame them, even though I'd done nothing to them. It was what I represented. Still, it was too much to believe that the Atlanteans were the innocent party, and the Ascended were the violent tyranny that had somehow managed to turn an entire kingdom away from the truth. But I'd never seen any of the third and fourth sons and daughters who were given to the gods during the rite. I could never understand how those like Duke Tierman and Lord Mazine had received a blessing from the gods. but never once had I seen an Ascended lift a single finger to fight the Kraven, the one thing the people of Solas feared more than death itself, the one thing they'd do anything and believe anything to remain safe from. He had claimed that the royals used the Kraven to keep the people in check, and if that were true, it worked. They gave up their own children to keep the beasts at bay. It had to be true. Worse yet, others must be involved in this. The priests and priestesses, close friends of the court who hadn't ascended. My parents? Gods, I couldn't lie to myself any longer. What had happened with him was proof enough. His blood had healed me, not turned me. His kisses had never cursed me, and so far, neither had his bite. The Ascended were vampires. They were the curse that had plagued this land. They used fear to control the masses. And they were the evil hidden in plain sight, feeding off those they had sworn to the gods to protect. And my brother was now one of them. Pulling my knees to my chest, I wrapped my arms around my legs. I closed my eyes against the burn of tears, resting my cheek against my knee. He couldn't be like the Duke. The Duchess wasn't too bad, neither was the Queen, but if they were feeding on children, almost draining innocent people and creating Kraven, they were no better than the Duke. I pressed my lips together, fighting back tears that wanted to break free. I'd cried enough today, but Ian, gods, Ian couldn't be like them. He was kind and gentle. I just couldn't believe that he would do those things. I couldn't. And then there was me. If it wasn't all a lie, then I would never be given to the gods. What had they planned for me? Why did they make me the chosen and link all these ascensions to me? Was it my abilities? I thought about what he had said after I'd taken his pain. He knew something, something he needed to tell me. I wasn't safe here, and I surely wasn't safe among the Ascended. If I did manage to escape, how could I go back to them, knowing what I knew now? How could I stay and allow him to take me to Atlantia when I would represent a kingdom who had slaughtered untold numbers of their people, who had enslaved their prince to use him to make more vampires? How could I stay with him? No matter how I felt for him, I could never trust him. And what I felt for him was also something I could no longer pretend didn't exist. I loved him. I was in love with him. And even if by some small chance I'd been able to move past the fact that he had come to Macedonia with the intention of taking and using me as a bargaining tool, I could never get over the blood that had been spilled because of him. I could never forget that Rylan and Victor, Lauren and Dafina, and so many others were dead, either by his hand, by his command, or by what he represented. I could never trust what he claimed when it came to us. What had he claimed about us, though? He had led me to believe that he had feelings for me, that I was anything but someone he needed to protect as Hawk and needed to use for his own means as a prince of Atlantia. He'd been intrigued from the start because I wasn't who he'd expected me to be, which apparently was an immoral, spoiled supporter of the Ascended. He'd been kind and interested because he needed to discover all he could about me, and maybe because he was drawn to me. But what did that truly mean? What happened in the woods may have proven that he was attracted to me, and that wasn't a farce. But lust was not love. It was not loyalty, and it was not long-lasting. Neither as Hawk nor as Castile had he claimed anything regarding us. The reality was jarring, and it hurt. It sliced deep because he'd made me feel warm. But it was reality, and it had to be dealt with. I mulled over the options in my head, escape, find my brother, because I had to know if he was the same, and then... what? Disappear? But first, I needed to figure out how to escape. The Wolven could track me, and he... escaping him would be nearly impossible. But I had to try, and there had to be a way. Maybe when my head didn't feel as if it were full of cobwebs, I would know what to do. Weary, I let my thoughts drift. I must have dozed off somehow, still curled up against the tub, because the next thing I heard was my name being called.
Penelope?
Jerking my head up, I blinked rapidly as Kieran's face came into view.
What the?
Good.
He was kneeling on the other side of the tub. The tub I was completely naked in.
I was worried you were dead.
What?
I threw a hand over my chest and pressed my legs together as much as I possibly could. I didn't even want to think about what he could see beneath the line of water.
What are you doing in here?
I called out your name, and you didn't answer.
He replied, tone as flat as a board.
You've been in here for a while. I thought I should make sure you were alive.
Of course I'm alive. Why wouldn't I be?
One eyebrow rose.
You are surrounded by people who tried to murder you, in case you've forgotten.
I haven't forgotten. I doubt any of them are hiding in the bathwater,
but one can never be too sure.
He made no attempt to stand and leave. I stared at him.
You shouldn't be in here, and I shouldn't have to explain that.
You have nothing to fear from me.
Why? Because of him?
I spat.
Because of Cass?
He said, and I blinked, hearing the nickname for the first time from someone other than him.
He would be annoyed to find me in here.
I wasn't sure if I should feel good to hear that or more annoyed.
A ghost of a smile appeared.
And then he'd be... intrigued.
My mouth opened, but my mind took that and leapt with it. I had nothing to say, absolutely nothing, but I thought about what I'd read about the Wolven and the Atlanteans. There was a bond between some of them, and while not much was known about what that bond entailed, I was confident that a prince was of the class that Wolven would be bonded to. I wanted to ask, but considering I was in a tub and naked, now wasn't the time. Kieran's gaze dropped, moving down my arms to the curve of my stomach and thigh.
Among my people, scars are revered. They are never hidden.
The only scar he could see was the one along the side of my waist. At least I hoped. Among my people, it's not polite to stare at a naked woman in a bathtub.
Your people sound incredibly boring.
Get out!
I shrieked. Chuckling, Kieran rose with nearly the same grace and fluidity that he moved with.
The prince wouldn't want you sitting in cold, dirty water. You should probably finish up your bath.
My nails were digging into the skin of my legs.
I don't care what he wants.
You should,
he replied, and I gritted my teeth.
Because he wants you even though he knows better. Even though he knows it will end in yet another tragedy.
Chapter 41. After quickly drying off and changing into clean, dry clothing, I did everything in my power to forget that the brief conversation in the bathing chamber with Kieran had happened. The breeches were a little tight, causing me to wonder if they had belonged to a child, but they were clean and soft, and I wasn't complaining. The long-sleeved tunic was made of heavy wool and reached my knees. The slits in the sides ended at the hips and would have made for easy access to my dagger. But I hadn't seen my dagger since the stables, and based on what I'd done with the last one, I winced. I doubted I'd have access to one anytime soon, which made escaping difficult. I needed a weapon, any weapon, but what I wanted was the dagger Victor had given me. I added that to my plan that wasn't quite a plan, at least not yet. Kieran left shortly after I came out of the bathing chamber, locking the door behind him. I doubted he went very far. Was probably standing outside the door. I started to braid my still drying hair, but remembered the mark on my neck and let the strands hang loose. I then roamed the room aimlessly. There was no avenue of escape. I couldn't even fit through the window. Was I going to be kept here until whatever time he deemed it fit for me to leave? Sighing, I plopped down on the bed. It was soft, so much thicker than the straw mat in the cell. I lay down, facing the door as I curled on my side. What would happen when he returned for me? Would his seeming acceptance of my attempted murder change? Everything he'd said about the Ascended may very well be true, but he was still the Dark One, and he was just as dangerous. He'd said so himself. There was a lot of blood on his hands. With how thinly my nerves were stretched, I didn't think I would doze off again. But that was exactly what happened. It had to be the still tender bite and its effect. Because one moment I was alert, staring at the closed door. The next, I was out, slipping into a deep sleep where I did not dream. I wasn't sure what woke me at first. It wasn't my name being called. It wasn't words at all. It was a faint touch on my cheek, and then on the side of my neck, just above the bite. My eyes fluttered open. The room was dim, except for the sconces and the single oil lamp on the nightstand. But I still saw him. He sat on the edge of the bed, and there was a dipping motion in my chest at the first sight of him, like always happened. I imagined it always would, no matter what I knew about him. At least he'd found a shirt, and had bathed somewhere, because his hair was damp, curling against his temples and ears. Dressed in all black, he cut an imposing, striking figure, and I no longer saw his attire, that of the uniform of a guard. I saw the Dark One. I glanced down at the sleeve of the dark tunic I wore, and then to my curled leg, where I expected to see the black breeches. Instead, I saw a threaded quilt draped over my legs. Unsettled, I lifted my gaze to his. He didn't say anything, neither did I, not for a long time. His fingers remained on my throat, above the mark. After what felt like an eternity, he removed his hand and asked, "How are you feeling?" I laughed. I couldn't help it. A giggle burst free. His head cocked to the side as a half grin appeared.
"What?"
"I can't believe you're asking me if I'm okay, when I stabbed you in the heart."
"Do you think you should be asking me that question?"
"Yes, no, maybe."
The grin deepened. "I'm relieved to hear that you care. I'm perfectly fine."
"I don't care," I muttered, sitting up.
"Lies,"
he murmured. He was right, of course, because without realizing what I was doing, I reached out with my senses to see if he was in physical pain. He wasn't. What I'd done earlier had worn off. I knew this because I felt the anguish that always brewed just below the surface. There was something else there, though. I'd felt it before. Confusion or conflict?
"You didn't answer my question."
"I'm fine." Pulling my gift back, I looked down at the quilt. It was a faint yellow and old. I wondered who it belonged to.
"Kieran said you dozed off in the bath."
"Did he tell you that he came into the bathing chamber?"
"Yes."
Surprised, my gaze shot to his.
"I trust Kieran," he said. "You've been asleep for several hours."
"Is that not normal?"
"It's not abnormal. I guess I'm..."
He frowned, as if something had just occurred to him.
"I guess I'm feeling guilty for biting you."
"You guess?" My brows lifted. He appeared to mull that over and then nodded.
"I believe so."
"You should feel guilt."
"Even though you stabbed me and left me to die?"
I snapped my mouth shut as my stomach churned with nausea. "You didn't die, obviously."
"Obviously."
There was a teasing glint to his eyes.
"I was barely winded."
"Congratulations," I muttered, rolling my eyes. He chuckled. Annoyed, I shoved the quilt off my legs and scooted to the other side of the bed. Why are you here? To take me back to the cell?
I should. If anyone other than Kieran knew you had stabbed me, I would be expected to.
I stood. Then why don't you?
I don't want to.
I stared at him, hands opening and closing at my sides, while he remained seated on the bed. So what now? How is this going to work, Your Highness? Satisfaction surged when I caught the way his jaw tightened. You'll keep me locked up in a room until you're ready for us to leave?
Do you not like this room?
It's far better than a dirty cell, but it's still a prison, a cage, no matter how nice the accommodations are. He was quiet for a moment.
You would know, wouldn't you? After all, you've been in prison since you were a child, caged and veiled.
There was no denying that. I'd been kept in both comfortable cages and bare ones. The reasons were different, but the end result was the same. Folding my arms, I looked at the small window to the night sky beyond.
I came here to escort you to dinner.
Escort me to dinner? Disbelief widened my eyes as I focused on him once more.
I feel like there's an echo in this room, but yes, I imagine you're hungry, he said,
and my stomach took that exact moment to confirm that was true.
And we'll discuss what will happen next, when we have some food in our stomachs.
No. His brows lifted.
No?
I knew I was being difficult over something not worth it, just like I'd been with Kieran. But I was not going to be at anyone's beck and call. I wasn't the maiden any longer, and things were not okay between us just because we had a temporary loss of rationale in the woods. He'd betrayed me. I'd tried to kill him. He still planned to use me to free his brother. We were enemies, no matter the truths. No matter that I loved him.
You have to be hungry, he said, pausing as he stretched out on his side, supporting his cheek with his fist.
He couldn't look more comfortable if he tried, or more alluring. I shook my head. I am hungry, he sighed.
Then what's the problem, princess?
I don't want to eat with you, I told him. That's the problem.
Well, it's a problem you're going to have to get over because it's your only option.
See, that's where you're wrong. I have options. I turned from him. I'd rather starve than eat with you, Your Highness. I squeaked, almost coming out of my skin, when he suddenly stood in front of me, moving so fast and so quietly I nearly missed it. Gods! I muttered, pressing my hand to my pounding heart.
That's where you're wrong, princess.
His eyes glowed a fiery amber as he glared down at me.
You don't have options when it comes to your own well-being and your own foolish stubbornness.
Excuse me?
I won't let you weaken or starve yourself because you're mad. And I do get it. I get why you're upset, why you want to fight me on everything, every step of the way.
He took that step toward me, and my spine locked up as I refused to back away. His eyes burned brighter.
I want you to, princess. I enjoy it.
You're twisted.
Never said I wasn't, he retorted. So, fight me, argue with me, see if you can actually injure me next time. I dare you.
My eyes widened as I lowered my arms. There's something wrong with you.
That may be true. But what is also true is the fact that I will not let you put yourself in unnecessary danger.
Maybe you've forgotten, but I can handle myself, I shot back.
I haven't forgotten. I won't ever prevent you from lifting a sword to protect your life or those you care about, he said. But I won't let you shove that sword through your own heart to prove a point.
Part of me was awed, still shocked that he wouldn't stop me from fighting. The other half was infuriated that he thought he could control any part of me. As a whole, I let out a small shriek of frustration. Of course you won't. What good am I to you dead? I imagine you still want to use me to free your brother.
A muscle along his jaw flexed.
You are nothing to me if you're dead.
I sucked in a sharp, stinging breath that scorched my lungs.
What in the world had I expected him to say? That he wouldn't want me dead because he cared?
I knew better.
I had to know better.
Come, the food will grow cold.
Without waiting for my response, he grabbed my hand. He started walking, but I dug in my heels. His head cranked toward me, the grip on my hand firm but not painful.
Don't fight me on this, Poppy. You need to eat, and my people need to see that you have my protection if you have any hope of not finding yourself spending your days locked in a room.
Every part of my being demanded that I do just what he claimed he enjoyed. It wanted me to fight him every step of the way. But common sense prevailed. Barely. I was hungry, and I needed to be at my strongest if I planned to escape. Plus, I needed his people to see that I was off limits. If eating dinner with him like we were the closest friends would provide that, then I needed to deal. So, that was what I did. I let him lead me out of the room, and I wasn't even surprised when I found Kieran waiting for us. Based on the hint of amusement in his features, he must have heard at least half of our argument. Kieran opened his mouth.
Don't test me,
he warned. Chuckling under his breath, Kieran said nothing as he fell into step behind us. We took the same stairs we'd sped down hours earlier, and I tried not to think about my mad dash in the woods. What had happened when he caught me? But a heat wave hit my veins nonetheless. He glanced down at me, a questioning look in his gaze that I ignored while praying he couldn't sense where my thoughts had gone. As soon as we entered the common area, Kieran slowed his pace so he walked directly behind me. I knew that was no unconscious act. Dissenters lined the walls, their faces pale as they whispered to one another, their eyes following us. I recognized some of them who'd stood in audience outside the cell. I saw Magda. There was no pity in her eyes now, just speculation. I lifted my chin and straightened my spine. The Ascended might very well be evil incarnate, and an untold number of people in Solus may be complicit, but what they did to me proved that they were no better. We rounded the corner and my gaze lifted. Oh, my gods, I whispered, stumbling back as my free hand flew to my mouth. I bumped into Kieran. His hand landed on my shoulder, steadying me as I stared at the walls of the hall. I couldn't move. I could barely breathe, as horror choked me. Now I understood the pale faces in the common area. Bodies lined the walls, arms outstretched, and spikes of bloodstone nailed through their hands. Some had received a reddish-brown stake through the center of their chests, others through the head. Some of them were mortal, some were Atlantean. A half a dozen of them on either side. I saw Rolf, and the man I had rendered unconscious, and I saw Mr. Tullis. My knees weakened as I stared up at him. He was dead, face a ghastly gray color. He was mortal, but a stake protruded from his still chest nonetheless. All he'd wanted was to save his last child. He'd been given an opportunity to do so. He'd escaped. And now? Now he was here. Not all of them were dead. One still breathed. Jericho. I locked down my senses before I could reach out and see what kind of pain he was in. His shaggy head hung as his chest rose in ragged, uneven breaths. Bloodstone pierced his palms, but the final fatal strike was thrust through his throat. Crimson colored the front of his bare chest, his pants, and pooled on the floor below him.
I promised you they'd pay for what they did.
He didn't sound or look smug. He didn't sound proud.
And now they know what will happen if they disobey me and seek to harm you.
Bile crept up in my throat. He's still alive, I whispered,
staring up at the wolven.
"Only until I'm ready to end his life,"
he commented, dropping my hand. He strode forward without another look back. Two men opened the large wooden doors to the great room, and he entered, stalking toward the center table where several covered dishes waited. I thought I might be sick. Kieran's hand squeezed my shoulder.
They deserved no less.
Had they? Even Mr. Tullis, who'd most likely delivered the fatal blow to me?
"Go,"
he urged with his hand. Somehow I got my feet moving as I walked past the bodies pinned to the wall like butterflies. In a daze, I didn't realize that I was seated to the right of him at the table, typically a place of honor. Kieran took the chair next to me. Numbly, I sat there as servants unveiled the platters of food while the rest of his entourage followed suit, seating themselves at the table. I recognized Delano and Nail, oddly relieved to see that they were okay. They had defended me, and I didn't want to think about the reasons behind it. Laid out before us was a feast: stewed beef, roasted duck, cold meats and cheese, baked potatoes. All of it smelled wonderful, but my stomach churned as I sat there, unable to move. Kieran offered me some of the beef, and I must have agreed because it ended up on my plate. Then came the duck and potato. He was the one who broke off a hunk of cheese and placed it on my plate as he reached for his glass, seeming to remember that it was one of my weaknesses. I stared down at my plate. I didn't see the food. I saw the bodies outside the room as conversation was slow to start, but soon picked up and became a steady hum. Glasses and plates clinked. Laughter sounded. And there were bodies nailed to the walls outside the great room.
"Poppy."
Blinking, I looked up at him. His golden eyes had cooled, but his jaw was hard enough to cut glass.
"Eat,"
he ordered in a low voice. I reached for a fork, picking it up and spearing a piece of meat. I took a bite, chewing slowly. It tasted as good as it smelled, but it settled too heavy in my stomach. I scooped up some of the potatoes. A few moments passed, and he said,
"You don't agree with what I did to them."
I looked over at him, unsure of how to even answer the question, if it was even a question at all. He sat back, glass in hand.
"Or are you so shocked you're actually speechless?"
Swallowing the last bit of food, I slowly placed the fork on the table. I wasn't expecting that.
"Can't imagine you were."
He smirked as he lifted the glass to his lips. How long will you leave them there?"
"Until I feel like it."
My chest twisted. "And Jericho?"
"Until I know for sure no one will dare to lift a hand against you again."
Becoming aware that several of the men around us had stopped talking and were listening, I chose my next words carefully. "I don't know your people very well, but I would think that they have learned a lesson."
He took a drink.
"What I did disturbs you?"
I knew that wasn't a question. My gaze shifted back to my plate.
"Did it disturb me?"
"Yes, I think it would unsettle most, or at least I hoped so. The blatancy of the kind of violence he was capable of was shocking, if not entirely surprising, further separating him from the guard I knew as Hawk."
"Eat,"
he said again, lowering his cup.
"I know you need to eat more than that."
I bit back the urge to tell him I was capable of determining how much food I needed to consume. Instead, I opened my senses to him. The anguish there was different, tasting tangy and almost bitter. The urge to reach out to him hit hard, causing me to curl one hand in my lap. Had what happened between us caused this? Was it what he'd done to his own supporters? It could possibly be both. I reached for my drink, closing my eyes, and when I reopened them, I found him watching me through thick lashes. I could tell him that it did bother me. I could say nothing at all. I imagined that perhaps he expected one of those two things from me. But I told him the truth. Not because I felt like I owed it to him, but because I owed it to myself. When I saw them, it horrified me. That was shocking, especially Mr. Tullis. What you did was surprising. But what disturbs me the most is that I drew in a deep breath. I don't feel all that bad. Those heavy lids lifted, and his stare was piercing. Those people laughed when Jericho talked about cutting my hand off, cheered when I bled and screamed, and offered other options for pieces for Jericho to carve and keep. I said, and the silence around us was almost unbearable. I'd never even met most of them before, and they were happy to see me ripped apart. So, I don't feel sympathy.
They don't deserve it,
he stated quietly.
Agreed,
Kieran murmured. I lifted my chin. But they're still mortal, or Atlantean. They still deserve dignity in death.
They didn't believe you deserved any dignity,
he stated. They were wrong, but that doesn't make this right, I said. His gaze drifted over my face. The muscle had stopped ticking.
Eat,
he repeated.
You're obsessed with ensuring that I eat, I told him.
One side of his lips kicked up.
Eat, and I'll tell you our plans.
That got several other people's attention. Hoping my stomach didn't revolt, I started eating instead of picking at my food. I didn't dare look at Kieran, because if I did, I would be looking outside the great room to the hall.
We're leaving in the morning, he stated.
And I almost choked on the chunk of cheese I'd taken a bite of. None of those around me seemed at all surprised. Tomorrow, I squeaked, torn between panic and hope. I would have a better chance of escaping out on the road than I would here. He nodded.
As I said, we'll be going home.
I took a healthy drink from my glass. But Atlantia is not my home.
But it is. At least partly.
What does that mean? Across the table from me, Delano spoke for the first time.
It means it's something I should have figured out sooner. So many things now make sense when they didn't before. Why they made you the maiden. How you survived a Kraven attack.
Your gifts, he said, lowering his voice on the last part so only I and those immediately around us could hear him.
You're not mortal, Poppy, at least not completely.
I opened my mouth and then closed it, not quite sure I heard him correctly. For a moment, I thought something was lodged in my throat. I took a drink, but the sensation was still there. Delano's jewel-blue eyes sharpened. Are you suggesting that she's
part Atlantean?
He finished for him.
Yes.
My hand trembled, sloshing liquid onto my fingers. That's impossible, I whispered.
Are you sure?
Delano asked him. And when I looked at him, I could see the shock in his eyes as his gaze moved over me, stopping and lingering on my neck.
100%,
he answered. How? I demanded. A faint smile played across his full lips. His gaze, too, lowered and stopped. On my throat. On the bite that I realized was barely hidden under the strands of hair. My blood. He knew after tasting my blood? Delano's eyes went wide as he sat back, staring at me like it was the first time he'd ever seen me. Forgetting about the hall, I looked at Kieran. I saw none of that. He arched a brow at me. This wasn't news to him.
It's rare. But it happens. A mortal crosses paths with an Atlantean. Nature takes its course, and 9 months later, a mortal child is born.
Kieran paused and ran his thumb over the rim of his chalice. But every so often a child of both kingdoms is born, mortal and Atlantean.
No, you have to be mistaken. I twisted in my seat.
My mother and father were mortal.
How can you be sure?
Hawk cut me off. No, not Hawk. Castile, the prince.
You thought I was mortal?
My heart lurched against my chest. But my brother, he's an ascended now.
That's a good question, Delano tacked on. Only if we're working off the assumption that he is your full-blooded brother, he said.
And I gasped. Or that he even has ascended, someone commented. The glass started to slip from my fingers. His reflexes were lightning quick. He caught the glass before it could hit the table, placing it down. Then he covered my hand, lowering it to the table.
Your brother is alive.
My heart had stopped. How can you be sure?
I've had eyes on him for months, Poppy. He hasn't been seen during the day, and I can only imagine that means he's an ascended.
Someone cursed and then spat on the floor. I closed my eyes. Part Atlantean. If that was why I was the chosen and was the source of my abilities, then had the Duke and the Duchess known? The Queen? I opened my eyes. Why would they keep me alive if they knew? His lips thinned.
Why do they keep my brother?
I jolted, my entire body freezing. I can't do that, right? I mean, I don't have the parts for it.
Parts? Kieran coughed. What have you been filling her head with?
The prince slid him a bland look.
Teeth. I do believe she means these.
Curling his upper lip, he ran his tongue over one fang, and my stomach dipped and twisted in a mixture of pleasure and unease.
They don't need that. They just need your blood for them to complete the ascension.
If I wasn't sitting, I likely would have fallen over. I wanted to refute his claim, but I couldn't come up with one good reason for why he'd lie about this. There was nothing to gain from doing so. I bent slightly in my chair, wondering if it was possible that I was having a heart attack.
I'm curious, Cass. Why must we go home?
Kieran asked, and I swore his voice rose with purpose.
When we will be going farther away from where your brother is held. It's the only place we can go,
he replied, those golden eyes remaining fixed on me.
Did you know that an Atlantean can only marry if both halves are standing in the soil of their land? It's the only way for them to become whole.
My lips parted as a hush descended over the entire room. Still reeling from the whole half-Atlantean thing, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. That he was saying, that damn dimple appeared in his right cheek and then in his left. Castile Danir, the Prince of Atlantia, smiled fully as he lifted our joint hands and said,
"We go home to marry my princess."
We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of From Blood and Ash by Jennifer L. Armentrout, performed by Stina Nielsen. Performance copyright 2020 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please visit our website at www.brilliancepublishing.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.